Blog Talk Radio.
Well, it was an interesting speech over at the university with David Horowitz. I was able to make it over there, and the room was not full. There was room for more people. There were a number of protesters outside, and they all seemed to be Muslim or anyway, I didn't stop to read every sign that was out there, but the Muslims apparently do not appreciate David Horowitz, but it was a good speech. And off the top of his head, he just started talking, and it was interesting in a number of ways. One of the topics that he covered. He covered it because of the nature of the speech. I wouldn't say it was disorganized, but it was just like talking to somebody about their opinions and them going into different subjects. It was enjoyable. And I couldn't tell. I would say at least it would seem to me maybe half and half of the audience was in support. Some people were making faces. At the end of the speech, a couple of people came in. Well, there was a person who had come in from the protesters, and my problem with the protesters, and there was a group of medical students that were at the front of the room in white coats, and I actually was able to talk to the head of them, the head of this group, who had gotten up and addressed Horowitz, and was able to ask him to come on the show. And he said he's going to come on the show on Monday. So, the first statement that he made was basically that Islam is broken in the Middle East. There's a lot of broken things in Islam. In these Islamic countries in the Middle East, but that Islam itself is not broken, and you have to take the good out of it. And he said it's because of my Muslim roots, my Muslim background, that I was able to do what I've done, and you know, get into medicine and to organize different groups and stuff. So that was good. And Horowitz said that he celebrated what they had done. And then what this gentleman had done, and then there was somebody near him that had said something that was a little bit more incendiary. And then there was a guy that came in, and he was, when you turned back and looked up on the side of the room, he was up on the left, but as you enter the room, he was on the right, and he stood up. And my problem with this guy, and then one other person, was that he asked a question, but it was really like 10 questions. And as Horowitz was trying to answer it, he would, you know, he would reply and kind of talk over Horowitz and then ask another question, make another point, and then Horowitz would make that. So it made it a little bit hard to follow. Number one, it was not really clear what exactly his point was. And it just went on and on. And then there was a guy from the group of the medical students who had did the same thing. He stood up, and he asked a question, and then Horowitz started to answer it, and then he interrupted with another. So, you know, and it's kind of a confusing way to do a question. But I mean, Horowitz was relatively, this is pretty obviously he's been through this a number of times, but he was he was a pretty good sport, but there was a few times when he just said, look, I'm not going to answer these questions anymore. I don't talk to protesters. I don't take questions from protesters, which surprised me a little bit. And then I saw that there was kind of a genius in his position. He basically said, I don't take questions from protesters because instead of protesting, you should be in the room. His answer was, I mean, some of the things that he said, and he's obviously a very bright guy and a very well-informed person in a lot of different events and topics over the last 40 or 50 years. His response was, I thought it was brilliant, and you couldn't really take issue with it. The protesters, I think if you were to gather all the stuff that he said, the protesters who protest outside and don't come into a building where a person is speaking are giving up their right to ask a question. You come to someone's speech and listen to it, and that gives you the right to question them or you know, cross-examine them or whatever. But to stand outside of a room and protest somebody and then after the speech is done, come in and try to put them on the witness stand is kind of a failed enterprise. And I totally agree with that. I mean, one of the deep dreams of the left is to kill free speech. And so there's probably no freedom in the West that's more important. No freedom in the history of the world that's more important than free speech. And, you know, I talked about this a couple of days ago when John Milton, the great poet, Paradise Lost, who's considered either the greatest or maybe the second greatest writer in the history of English, had stated that basically you need free speech to understand topics, to understand issues and subjects. And to just hear one side of it means not really understanding it at all. There has to be back and forth, which means at times it's controversial by definition, because the people that you want to stop from talking are saying things that are controversial. So by definition, it's controversial, but it is within the controversy that we're educated, I think was John Milton's. And I thought that that Horowitz's answers to these guys were good. I really dislike this kind of thing. And you ask somebody a question, if you don't like their answer, you interrupt them and throw another question at them, or tell them while they're trying to say it how they're wrong. And then there were, you know, there was a couple of other people. There were some older, they may be faculty members or employees of the university that were, as you look back up on the group, you know, it was a little room to give speeches in, you know. You came in and the elevation went down and then at the bottom flattens out, and then there's the you know, it's an auditorium. You have a stage and everything. So it turned out to be exactly the right size of a room. And I asked one of the people who had put the show on, put on the speech, to if he would consider coming. So, but these kind of faculty members were up and kind of laughing. And, you know, some people at the beginning of the speech were just kind of talking and making rude comments. And this is a trope. This is a theme from the left. You disrespect people by showing them that they're not worth, you know, they're not up to standard. But one of the people asked him where he got his one piece of information, and they said the internet, and then these people started laughing. I'm thinking these the same people are undoubtedly going onto the internet to get facts every day. So that was kind of a failed response. And there was, you know, a certain amount of vitriol or scorn from these people, but you know, they really weren't making their point. I'm just trying to think of who had made their point, that these guys that got up and asked for the, or, you know, made these long questions. It seemed ridiculous. You ask somebody a question and then you interrupt them and ask another question, and they're answering that one. Then you interrupt them and ask another question. It seemed childish, you know, and there was no end to the question at that point. The question went on for 5 or 10 minutes. And so it was an exercise in patience, waiting for the person to finish, and a person who would talk forever if they had a chance, just to show that the person that they're speaking to, the speaker, the person who gave the speech, wasn't up to it, wasn't right, wasn't true. But it was just, it was kind of entertaining, you know, just listen to somebody talk off the top of their head and make a bunch of points about free speech and the history of West and Islam and the state of, one of the things that stuck with me is Horowitz talked about, and so my impression of the guy, shorter than you would have thought. I guess he looked like he was about maybe 5'7". So not a real tall guy, you know, thin and maybe a little bit older than, and his voice was a little bit reedy. It was a little bit hoarse or just not strong, but a very active mind. That's how he came across. And then he wore a white coat, not a Muslim coat, but a muslin coat. I think that's what it's called. Not absolutely white, but pretty much maybe just a little bit off white. And then no tie. And then, you know, like a darker shirt and pants. But and he had a couple of burly bodyguards who were black and big guys. I mean, they looked like they could have been in the NFL, and one on each side. And so in case things got out of hand, I would say the protesters coming into the building were not rude. We're respectful. And I would sum them up as being, it would seem to me, local Muslims or foreign students. That was my impression of them. But what Horowitz gets onto is the lack of any diversity in college faculties. And it was talking about a guy in a law professor at I think it was either USC or UCLA. It was UCLA. With who they were trying to kick off the faculty, and he said, why is it you guys love diversity, why is it there's no diversity in these college campuses? And the back and forth was pretty funny. And I mean, really, when you think about it, it's really pathetic that if you could, one of the elements that you could sum up of leftism is being infantile in their view of the world. They don't want any opposition. That's where these free, you know, these trigger warnings, the universities that are putting out speech codes and everything. And so they, you know, you come up to somebody else's speech and try to get them to shut it down. It's kind of a funny idea, you know? It's kind of sad. And then a person who refused to listen to the speech comes in and wants to interview. And Horowitz says, I don't take questions from protesters, which initially sounds kind of like, well, what do you mean? But then when you think about it, well, yeah, the protester is so opposed to free speech. The protester only wants to stop, like they've been able to do in some places. They want to stop the person from coming in and giving their speech. They're not really interested in dialogue. Therefore, to allow this person to then come in and have a free speech right to interview the speaker is absurd, especially when they don't even know what the speaker just said. So I thought that was well articulated, but it was good. We don't have enough of that type of thing in this. The you know, but basically, just to kind of sum this thing up, he was interesting. He was, you know, he's an older guy, but he was very, very articulate, and I thought the points that he made were well stated, and that he made some and I mean, like, to listen to him off the top of his head. I mean, should he have given an organized speech? I mean, in a way, it was kind of more interesting to just hear his thoughts. And he did talk about Islam and the history of Islam and such. So in Islam in America on campuses and stuff. So anyway, if you were there, you know what I'm talking about. We'll take a break right here and come back. And got some amazing information out about Obama that's coming out in a book. Here's Wes Montgomery and Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450, and 805-6180 to text. Here is here's Wendy. And this is Herb Alpert's show called Hollywood Palace.
You know, I know someone who at the age of 19 taught himself how to play the guitar. And today, he's considered by musicians to be one of the greatest jazz guitarists in the world. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Wes Montgomery.
So there's this book that is coming out that is, it got some information in it. And, you know, the entire time that Obama was in office, there was a moratorium on really bringing out any too much information about his past or really criticizing him at all. But here's a little bit from Inside Edition on this new book that's got some amazing revelations, including the fact that supposedly Obama was considering a gay relationship.
As Barack and Michelle Obama make their first joint public appearance since leaving the White House, comes word that she wasn't the first woman he proposed to. Back when he was a 25-year-old college grad living in Chicago, the future president actually popped the question to this woman twice, according to a new book. The biography Rising Star says Sheila Yager lived with young Barack Obama in the Windy City back in the 80s. In the winter of 86, when we visited my parents, he asked me to marry him. The book quotes Sheila Yager as saying, but her mother thought that at 23, she was too young to get married. Obama proposed again in 1988, right before he left for Harvard Law School, the book says. Again, Sheila Yager said no.
It was a true pleasure to be here.
Now 53, Sheila went on to become a professor of East Asian Studies at Oberlin College in Ohio. And of course, Obama met Harvard Law School graduate Michelle Robinson, fell in love, and proposed. Only she said yes, and the rest is history.
So nobody's really, you know, getting into this. There's got to be something out there in the in the media. The part of the book where he is considering some sort of a gay affair, but let me check for some clips and see if I can find anything on that. But the book has yet to be published. Let's we'll take another break here and get some local news. 6:29 a.m. Las Cruces, AM 1450. 523-1450, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces. Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, Kelly.
It's Kelly. Please talk.
Hey, Kelly. There's a new tick-borne disease called Powassan.
Okay.
Have you heard of it?
Not yet.
Okay. It's causing meningitis, and when you're infected by it, it happens in less than 24 hours. It's Powassan.
I found it.
Okay, I'll talk to you later.
Thank you. I just got a phone call from Tom who said there's a new tick disease out there called Powassan, and I just looked that up, and the clips that I'm finding are a couple of years old, but I had never heard of it before. I'll have a clip on that for you in just a second. There's a TSA report warning against truck ramming attacks by terrorists. So it is time to is it time to put restrictions on trucks? We need to get rid of trucks. I mean, got to get rid of guns, so now we got to get rid of trucks and knives and everything else. But let's see this report. Truck owners and truck rental agencies in the U.S. must be, quote, vigilant about the increasing frequency of ramming attacks by terrorists using vehicles as killing machines, according to TSA, and picked up by NBC News. And the report says that vehicle ramming attacks, threat landscape indicators and countermeasures is the name of the report. In the past 3 years, at least 173 people have been killed and more than 700 wounded in 17 ramming attacks around the world. Of the 17 attacks, 13 were resulted in fatalities, 5 carried out in France, both before and after the Nice attack, and 4 took place in Israel. 9 of the 17 attackers were carried attacks. It says 9 of the 17 attackers were carried out in the past 10 months. A little mistake there, but 17 attacks. One involved an Ohio State University student who drove his car into a crowd last November and then began slashing fellow students before campus police killed him. 11 people were wounded. I've said this before, I will say it again. I'm absolutely astounded at the idea that there's a God out there, that the notion that there is a God out there and that he wants his people to go around and kill others as a sign of his power, I guess, I don't know exactly what the, connect the dots there, but radical Muslims will tell you that he is a God of love. So how exactly that is articulated is not clear. All right. So a few more headlines here for you. Republicans try again on the healthcare vote today. And all right, so here is, let me get to this. I was looking for this, where the story is now. Well, here's another clip for you from this is unbelievable. I mean, Barack Obama is in my opinion, is not going to go down highly in the history of presidents, but that's just my opinion. But here is from the Golden State Times. Barack Obama idolized Donald Trump while at Harvard Law School, according to this new book. Check it out.
Being Trump, according to a new...
Here, let me get this right to the beginning.
Obama once dreamed of being Trump, according to a new manuscript. Hello, everyone. Jen here, Golden State Times, and today we have a new story. This one comes courtesy of Fox News Politics, and it says that more than two decades before he railed against President Trump's temperament and core values, a young Barack Obama dreamed of becoming the billionaire businessman. Obama revealed his idolization of the Donald and what he stood for in a never-published book written with a classmate during his Harvard Law School days. And it says that portions of which are now published in an upcoming Obama biography, Rising Star. Americans have a continuing normative commitment to the ideals of individual freedom and mobility, Obama wrote in the manuscript. He went on to say the depth of his commitment may be similarly dismissed as the unfounded optimism of the average American. I may not be Donald Trump now, but you just wait. If I don't make it, my children will. Obama wrote the discarded book with many titles, of which they are Transformative Politics or Promises of Democracy, Hopeful Critiques of American Ideology. So those were the two working titles that, you know, he had for that manuscript. And he wrote it with classmate Rob Fisher during Obama's enrollment in Harvard from 1988 to 1991. More than 25 years later, Obama, now a former president, has given a far different evaluation of Trump. The current president, who has promised to undo much of Obama's White House legacy and was a frequent critic of Obama during his tenure at the Oval Office. So, yeah, folks. Obama has always idolized Trump, you know, because even during the beginning of his presidency, he still was spoke very well of Trump, according to some older, you know, 2007 reports. So that never changed up until, you know, now that he was running for office and when he won. But that's, you know, that, like President Trump says, it's all politics, right? To his face, to President Trump's face, Obama was trying to be all nice and, you know, courteous and this and that, you know, talking with him like if they were friends. But then as soon as, you know, he got out of, you know, out of the White House when he didn't belong there anymore, he started tweeting a whole bunch of garbage against Trump because that's the way they are. They're cowards. They don't say anything to people's faces and they call it politics. So there is really, you know.
All right. So anyway, that's from the Golden State Times or whatever it's called. But the thing that I found interesting in there was this claim, and I've got to do some more research on it. Let me take another break and see what I can find on the story that he supposedly Trump had this, or not Trump, but Obama had fantasized about, or had considered, I should say, having a gay relationship or affair or something. Is, you know, I always had this sense from Obama, what do you want to call it, light in the loafers, or the sense that there is just something different about the way he presents himself, the way he talks and moves and everything, that just seems like, you know what I'm saying, light in the loafers. That he is, you just, something about the guy just seems like he might be gay or bi. I can't remember if I have ever said that before, but it's been out there for a long time, claims that he'd had affairs with men and this and that. And all right, let's take a little break here and we'll get some local weather. We'll come right back. 523-1450. Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, Kelly, another good one for you. A man was walking down the street in Santa Fe with all cactus sticking out of his feet.
Yeah, they just...
And the police, you got that one?
They just broadcast it in the local news.
Okay, I just wanted to let you know. Okay,
thanks,
Kelly,
thanks,
bye-bye.
Man. Bye-bye.
Good morning, Kelly. This is your good friend, Bob. How are you?
Hey.
Kelly, yesterday was a really good day. I'm not going to talk about it on the air, but I'd like to be able to say a few things concerning being generous.
All right, so we're on the air in 20 seconds, so prepare yourself.
Okay, you like it, and just know that I've never met a man that made me so mad than Barack Obama, so I'm going to try not to talk about him.
Wait. Do you want to talk about his gay life?
I don't want to.
Here we go.
It'll be too derogatory. Let me talk about something like marketing, you know. I mean, I'll incorporate it, okay? So I'll incorporate it. No, I don't like. I mean, I voted for him. I don't like him. He makes me mad, you know. So,
folks, we have Bob on the air right now. What's up, Bob?
Yes, sir, Kelly. It's an honor to talk to you. The reason I'm calling is because I have a girlfriend that I think very highly of, and, you know, I want to get her a job. So I'm going to do something very generous for Walmart on Reconava, and then something really generous for Bank of America. But the reason I'm going to go ahead and close, but the reason I wanted to call you, Kelly, was because I've got Texas Roadhouse in mind for you because you're the best, and everybody tells me they are the best, bar none. Okay? So I'm also passing out an American flag. So if anybody sees me, I'll be happy to provide them with an American flag. I got to make a living, so I'm going to go ahead and look into the possibility of trying to become District 5 for the Dauphin County Commissioner. That's going to be new because I've never done anything like that before. But I love people that call, like a gentleman by the name of Mike. He said he loves politics. I don't know who he is, but I'd like to meet him. And then I want to spend some time swimming at New Mexico State University, being an alumni. Kelly, if I can be contributory in any way, it would be an honor to you. I think very highly of Bravo Mike. If I do, I'm going to have to start saving money so I can advertise. But it's a whole new road, and it's very exciting, you know, about what's happening. And you're on top of the heat. So, Kelly, please drive the speed limit and know that not only do I care about you, but there's many people in the community who think the world of you. Okay?
I do appreciate that, Bob.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I doze off there? No, thanks for the call, Bob. Really appreciate it. Well, you got million-dollar sound effects. You got to use them. You got to use them, folks. Okay, here is this article from the Daily Mail. Obama's sex secrets laid bare. How he considered a gay fling, had passionate sex and cocaine with one white girl, proposed twice to another, and cheated on Michelle before they married. And I got to tell you, this girl that he had the affair with, she is, she puts the ugh in ugly, if you know what I mean. Very, to me, a little masculine looking. It could be just a coincidence, but new biography of Barack Obama is laying bare his life since he was born and discloses his relationships before he married Michelle. Rising Star, The Making of Barack Obama by Pulitzer Prize winner David J. Garrow, is published on May 9th. It reveals Obama was long-term lover of Genevieve Cook, an Australian-born graduate who was 3 years his senior. She reveals they had sex, S-E-X, on their first date, and that the 22-year-old, who was then a journalist on a financial trade magazine, was earthy and passionate. Obama was a journalist on a financial trade magazine? I thought he hated capitalism. She also reveals his use of cocaine at age 22 and 23, far later than he himself has spoken of in his own memoir. The book reveals he proposed twice to another white girlfriend, Sheila Miyoshi Yeager. I wonder if that's any relation to Ken Miyagashima Jagger, who is now an Oberlin College, Ohio professor. He cheated on Michelle, going back to Jagger, who now says, "I always felt bad," although he may have cheated on Jagger too with an Hispanic single mom. Maybe he was working his way through sounds like he was trying every variety. The white girlfriends were made into a composite character in Dreams from My Father. Should have been, I won't say it, but Dreams from My Father, and Yeager says Obama's own memoir is inaccurate, and he considered a gay affair while at college, where his mentor was an openly homosexual professor whom Obama called, quote, a wonderful guy. And so what do you think about that? Well, I'll take a little break here and come back and cover a little bit more on this. 523-1450, 649 Kelly O'Connell in Las Cruces, 523-1450. All right, so here is a little bit more. So they didn't do any, it's not that they didn't do any background checking on Obama, that goes without saying, but they hardly did any historical, I mean, there's so much that we don't know about Obama, and the media was so content with hiding him for whatever reason, you know? And I'm sure the reason was that, I mean, it had to be either there were unacceptable things about the guy, or, and I do have a nice clip here, but my, I don't know what's going on with this computer, but I think it may be the internet. It suddenly slowed down to a slug's, not a snail's pace, but a slug's pace. And I'm going to have to get that tick-borne virus story later for you. Tom, that story's only a couple years old. But, all right, so here, all right, this thing is starting to pep up a little bit. Sometimes computers are like people, you know, or animals like cats or something like that. Got to work with them a little bit. Here is a little bit more in this clip. And from Tucker, Tucker's come up with some great stuff. Here we go.
There's probably no better way to put your entire life history under the microscope than to run for president. But astonishingly, the one big exception to this rule appears to be Barack Obama. Considering how quickly he rose to national prominence, much of his past underwent amazingly little vetting before he became the president, as many have noted. Now a new biography may prove that. It's called Rising Star, The Making of Barack Obama. And it appears to fill in some of the gaps the press should have filled in years ago. Jimmy Weinstein hosts his own podcast and has talked to the author of this book, Pulitzer Prize winner David Garrow, a couple of times. Jamie, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Joining us. So Garrow is not doing any press for a month. This book comes out next month. But what's amazing to me in talking to you about your conversations with him is that apparently he got material after Obama left office that nobody else had gotten. How could that have happened?
Yeah, I asked him, what is there to know about him after 10 years in office in the public eye? He laughed at the idea that he's been so well covered. He said there's not even a good magazine article about Obama's time in the Illinois state legislature. But I got him to kind of open up on some things that he will reveal in this book. And one of them he found a manuscript that President Obama wrote with his best friend at Harvard at the time, at Harvard Law School, that's, 200 pages long, 140 pages on race, which he says that if got out at the time, may have derailed his run for presidency.
That's unbelievable. Now, he wrote with a guy called Rob Fisher, who I've never seen interviewed ever. Maybe he has been, not widely. We got a copy of an excerpt of this book. It's like almost 1,500 pages long. We got a small part of it. I want to put on the screen a couple of quotes from this never-before-published manuscript from Barack Obama. Racism against African Americans continues to exist throughout American society, which is admittedly a racist culture, precisely because American society is so racist. We cannot realistically expect for white America to make special concession toward blacks over the long haul. The greatest testimony to the forge of racist ideology in American culture is that it affects not only the minds of whites, but the minds of blacks as well. And he goes on to say, it's so racist that you have to kind of sneak reforms past the white people.
Yeah, and what Professor Garrow said that is if an opposition researcher in 2008, a Republican opposition researcher, got this, this is the type of thing, obviously, in our politics today that could derail a presidential candidate. But he's so kind of critical of the media and their attempts to vet Obama. He thinks they did a terrible job. For instance, he raised Obama's biography. He was amazed that the media just took that kind of unskeptically, as if that was a pure nonfiction book, that everything he said was fact. He's kind of alluding, I think, that in his biography, he's going to pick apart some of
so
that.
So Garrow is a liberal. I think he's probably a Bernie voter. He won the Pulitzer
Prize. He voted for Bernie.
He's literally a Bernie voter. He's an academic. He's written extensively on the civil rights movement. He's not a right winger in any way. Is it your impression that there are things in this book that are going to shock readers?
That's what he says. He says there's a lot in this book that's not known. It's going to shock a lot of readers, and it's going to reshape perhaps how we view President Obama, whether you're a conservative or a liberal.
So striking how little we know even at this point. Jamie Weinstein, thanks a lot for the preview of that.
Thank you.
It's going to be a big deal when it comes out next month.
All right, so here's a question. And
we can go longer. You can tune in every night.
Okay, so here's a question for you. Now, I'm sure that anybody – there's going to be a gut response for most people, even people that are probably conservative, a lot of people. Was he gay or is he gay? You know, a lot of people say, what difference does it make? Doesn't matter. It's none of your business. Don't worry about it. Would it have been anybody's business when he was in office or when he was running? And if it's not anybody's business, why wouldn't it be? Wouldn't that be a thing to talk about or to know? Here is Jim Gaffigan, a classic, Hot Pockets.
Never really see that on a menu when you go out to dinner. You know, we'll see all Caesar salad and the Hot Pocket.
Tonight's specials, we have a sea bass, which is broiled, and we have a hot pocket, which is cooked in a dirty microwave. And that comes with a side of Pepto. Is your hot pocket cold in the middle? It's frozen. But it can be served boiling lava hot. Will it burn my mouth? It'll destroy your mouth. Everything will taste like rubber for a month. All of the hot pocket. Hot pocket! Hot pocket, yeah. They haven't been around that long, like 10 years. How'd they come up with that? Was there some kind of marketing meeting like, I got an idea. How about we fill a Pop-Tart with nasty meat? Then you can cook it in a sleeve thing. You can dunk it in the toilet. There is the vegetarian hot pocket for those of us that don't want to eat meat but still would like diarrhea. Hot pocket. It should just come with a roll of toilet paper. There's the lean pocket. I don't even want to know what's in there. Imagine the directions. Take out of box, place directly in toilet. Flush pocket. Pocket. Recently, they introduced the breakfast hot pocket. Finally. I can't think of a better way to start the day. Good morning. You're about to call in sick. Hot pocket. Now you can have a hot pocket for breakfast, a hot pocket for lunch, and be dead by dinner.
Well, good morning, 7:06, and last hour we did talk about a few things, including the David Horowitz speech that was last night that I went to, and I was going to try to ask him to come on the show, and then he was gone instantly after the speech. And then we're talking about the new book that's come out about Obama that has a lot of details that we've never heard before. And we know so little about Obama, even though he was president for 2 years. And there was a self-imposed moratorium in the mainstream media against criticizing him in any meaningful way or doing any background report. For example, we still don't know what his grades were. For example, I can't imagine any other president that we know so little about. So anyway, but we do now have Ben in the studio and the Rossin Report. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Kelly.
How you doing?
Doing terrific. Thanks for having me on. You know, today is the National Day of Prayer. So we've got an event at the county building at 10 o'clock this morning. I think there's an event at City Hall at noon. But I'd encourage people, whether or not you could come to either of those events, to take a few minutes and pray for your leaders.
Yeah. And so did you involved in this in the last few years?
Sure have. The last, 2014, 15, and 16, I introduced the resolution for the National Day of Prayer. This year, Chair Solis has introduced that, and we'll be running the meeting today at 10 o'clock.
Very nice. So speaking of which, what's going on down at the county?
Well, you know, probably the biggest thing is the change in the leadership at the county manager position. Kelly, for those leaders who for those listeners who are not aware, just over a week ago, Julia Brown was terminated with the county as the county manager. You know, and Kelly, let me talk about that a little bit because I've had a lot of questions about that in the process. Julia was hired right after my appointment in 2013. The process was already underway when I came on the commission, and Julia Brown was the one who was selected. The county commission did a review in 2015 under Chairman Hancock, and then a review, Chairman Garrett, and then a review in 2016 under Chairman Hancock. But neither one of those reviews, Kelly, as we've talked about here, were ever given to Julia or ever filed with HR. So there were no reviews, which I think is kind of funny because in 2016, Billy Garrett, Commissioner Garrett, decided to give Julie a three-year contract extension, a 30% raise, tripling of the golden parachute without ever doing a review. And yet now he's upset that we didn't do a review first. It just rings so hollow. It's kind of humorous.
Well, I mean, a couple of questions come to mind that anybody's going to wonder. Number one, is this all a game to Billy Garrett? I mean, is the impression that he thinks that he's outfoxing people, that he's playing chess and everybody else is playing checkers?
I think we're seeing some of that, Kelly, for the same reason that he's put the transit district back on the agenda for Tuesday again. But yes, certainly there's a lot of political gamesmanship taking place.
And he sees himself as one of the greatest geniuses in the history of Doniana County, obviously. Now, let me ask you this. Is he willing to take any of the responsibility or bear any of the costs that might result as a fallout from not turning in these job reviews?
I doubt it, Kelly.
Does he feel like he is morally or legally on the hook for the failure to take these reviews that obviously took time and effort and some deep analysis and input from others? The fact that he and his colleague, his buddy, Wayne Hancock, and is there any sense that he will admit in public? Does he think that he's totally unaccountable, that he's beyond anybody else, you know, putting him on the spot?
You know, Kelly, his constituents and the residents of Doniana County need to be holding him accountable, because after not doing those, I mean, keep in mind that in October of last year was when they gave Julia this contract. The contract vote passed with only 3 out of 5 votes, so the very minimum number of votes that it could take to pass.
Who was the other vote?
David Garcia, Wayne Hancock, and Billy Garrett. David Garcia and Wayne Hancock were both ousted in June, 4 months earlier, by the voters who said, "We do not want you to represent us any longer." And yet they teamed up with Billy Garrett to give her this ridiculous extension with the express purpose of making sure that the new commissioners did not have a say in who is running the county, and that's wrong. That by disrespecting the new commissioners like that, they've disrespected the voters who said, "We want new leadership, we want a different direction on the county commission." And yet to make sure that that couldn't happen, Billy Garrett passed this 3-year contract extension for Julia. So, you know, at that point, it became very clear this was going to be a short term.
Will you look into the possibility of holding Commissioner Garrett responsible, personally responsible and legally responsible, professionally responsible for this absurd position that he's laying out there, that he had this review and that he didn't turn it in, and the person who was his understudy, his friend, Wayne Hancock, had a review and didn't turn it in? That, and number one, I'd like to know if there was collusion between the two on these both not turning these in, number one. Number two, I'd like to know if he had the right. Did he have the right as the head of the committee, as the head of the commission, to not turn it in? And whether I'd like you guys to talk about whether he can be held, since he's still in office, professionally responsible and be caused to bear some of the costs that are resulting from his lack of doing his job.
You know, Kelly, this reminds me a lot of David Gutierrez. David Gutierrez was the treasurer for the county. He took one of his employees in the county vehicle to the bank and back, and along the way stopped at a hotel and said, "Hey, I'll give you $2,000. Come inside with me." Of course, at that point, she rebuffed that. They came back to the county building. She filed with HR. The county has paid out multiple lawsuits for David Gutierrez's bad action. And when we tried to collect that from David Gutierrez, we were unsuccessful in the courts. And that one was even more clear than this one, of somebody acting well outside their responsibility. So unfortunately, I think the only accountability that we're going to get from Billy Garrett is the voters holding him accountable and making sure that he doesn't serve in office again.
Does he present himself as being an intellect that other people can't understand, that his beliefs, the depth of his knowledge and understanding, his love for humanity, his vision into the future? Does he present himself as being a person who's beyond the average, the understanding of the average person?
Kelly, that leads straight into the transit district, because remember in 2014, the voters said no to the transit district by over 15%. And so then Chairman Garrett at the time, 3 months later, said the voters obviously didn't understand what they were voting on, passed the largest tax increase in the history of Doñana County, and funded the bus system anyway. And so I think that goes to the point that you were making right there, where we have individuals in this community, and I would say Billy Garrett is among those, who do not believe that the voters are to be respected or know what they're talking about. And so that's the same thing you see happening with Julia's contract. The voters said, no, we're not going to reelect the chair and the vice chair of the county commission. First, Kelly, I've looked back over 40 years, and that's never happened before in the last 40 years, and the records are hard to come by longer than that. But so we've got – it has not happened before.
What hasn't happened?
Having the chair and the vice chair both lose their reelection bids. And then the response from the chair, vice chair, and Billy Garrett is that the voters obviously don't understand. We're going to extend Julia's contract for 3 years to make sure the voters don't have a chance to change the direction of the county commission. And again, it's the exact same thing. It's a complete disrespect for the voters and putting through their own agenda without caring about what the voters have to say.
So did you look back and see if anybody had ever lost two years in a row the evaluation of the county manager?
You know, that's a very significant problem that's out there. You know, Kelly, it is what it is. I'm glad that we're moving in a different direction. The county commission this past Tuesday entered into a contract with Chuck McMahon, he was the assistant county manager. We've put him as the interim county manager for 1 year while we go through an external search to find a good county manager for us. In Mr. McMahon's contract is a provision that he can apply for that position, and I suspect that he will. Chuck has been with the county for 17 years, Kelly, and when we hired Julie, he was one of the top candidates that we were considering at that time. And I think Chuck will do a very good job, certainly in the interim, in keeping the ship afloat, making sure work is getting done and the county's being responsive.
So is there going to be an accounting for Billy Garrett for what he's done?
Well, Kelly, Billy Garrett is term limited out next year. And so unless he chooses to run for something else, I don't think there's anything to hold him accountable. Or, I mean, there's no way to hold him accountable.
So when the people vote and Billy Garrett ignores it and goes ahead and does his own legislation, remember what the declaration said. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. From the consent of the governed. So,
a very important phrase right there that certain people in Doñana County don't seem to understand, Kelly.
Billy Garrett holds himself to be personally above the Declaration of Independence, one of the two most important documents in the history of the United States, because of his own insight, his genius, his love of the people, his ability to predict the future, and the fact that the people need such a great genius to stand in for them. So how did this genius, when it was applied to the transit district, play out, his ability to foresee the future and the needs of the people and meet those needs?
Well, Kelly, keep in mind that the transit district last month, we voted 4-1 not to renew that contract, $750,000 a year contract. We decided not to renew that. Billy Garrett has put that back on the agenda for this coming Tuesday's meeting. And if any listeners care about the way their tax dollars are spent, I hope they'll contact their county commissioner and put their voice in there. We've got a bus system, Kelly, that has four buses. Two of them go from Las Cruces to Anthony. One goes from Anthony to Chaparral, and the other goes from Anthony to the casino at Sunland Park. Those are the four buses. We've got an executive director who's getting paid $100,000 a year to manage those four buses. In contrast, Kelly, the city bus system, the top guy over there is paid only $80,000 a year. And he supervises more than double. I don't know how many buses the city has, but many more than four. So we have don't worry if you think that's too much work for one guy to do. He does have two people in the office to help him out in managing those four buses while he collects his $124,000 salary. And all of this is done in the pretense of that we're helping people. Well, let's talk about that. So the route from Anthony to Chaparral, we've talked about it before here, Kelly. For the month of February had 40-some riders on it. The route goes six times a day, five times a week. So we're looking at a route from Anthony to Chaparral that was running 120 times for the month and only had 40 riders. If all 40 of those riders were riding at a different time, that means the bus went empty back and forth 80 times for the month of February. And that's what we're dealing with. This bus system isn't helping people or they would be riding it. The bus system is helping David Armijo line his pocket with taxpayer money, and that's wrong.
So what was the ability of Billy Garrett to foresee the needs of the future for all the people that were too dumb to vote for the public transportation? What need was he filling?
Well, Kelly, we've had the bus system now for 3 years, and based on the ridership, I do not believe there is a need that it is filling.
And I was told that each ride is costing around $70?
We're spending about $14,000 a day on the system. I'm not sure how much that equates to per rider.
How many? Okay, so now that we've been through 3 years of this, was there a justification that Billy Garrett gave for bringing this back on the list of things that needed to be approved?
If we just keep doing it, sooner or later, someone will ride the bus.
That's what he said?
No, but that's what the attitude is on this whole thing is you just have to give it more time. Give it more time, people will start riding it. Well, 3 years is a lot of time, and we still don't have ridership. So yesterday, or maybe this morning, they sent out a press release about, hey, our ridership has almost doubled. Well, you know, what they've got going on right now is they've got PVA members and other members that are going and riding the bus just to get the numbers up. So in preparation for this meeting, they can show how many great riders they've had. Well, who are going anywhere in particular, they're just riding the bus to ride the bus to get the numbers up for the meeting. And it's disingenuous at best to say this is supposed to be helping people. It's not helping people. So let's put some fake riders on there just so that we can show we've got good numbers, so that we can come back to the county commission and get hundreds of thousands of dollars of taxpayer money to waste.
All right. So would you like people to show up for the next meeting?
That'd be great. Our meeting's going to be Tuesday morning at 9:00. If you can't make it, contact your county commissioner. You can get their contact information from the county's webpage, donyanacounty.org, where I'll have those posted on my Facebook page at Benjamin Rawson, County Commission District 3.
Is there a chance that you'll change commission will change the times of the meeting so that more people can attend?
You know, Kelly, that is a discussion that I've heard taking place about moving those meetings to an evening, and we'll have to see what happens.
Okay. Thanks for coming on, Ben. Anything else?
That's it, Kelly. Thank you, and have a great day.
Have a great day, you too. Thanks for sponsoring the show.
Absolutely.
Folks, we'll take a break here with some Wes Montgomery. And 723 AM Las Cruces AM 1450, 523-1450, and we're going to come back and dive into more news. Seven twenty-six, and you just heard the news from Ben Rawson that they, despite the astounding waste of money on the bus system, Billy Garrett is planning to bring it back for more. So, look, Billy Garrett and people like him, these far leftists, are either the greatest geniuses of the age or they're not. Now, Billy is assuming that he is, that anybody who You know, basically he knows the difference between good and bad, right and wrong, up and down. And if you disagree with him, you're wrong. But what if he doesn't know that? What if he does? What if his ideas are wrong? They're misguided. His beliefs are misguided. His assumptions are totally off. Well, doesn't that appear to be the fact on the application of his ideas, his values to the bus system? Or is the purpose of government to waste money on things like public transportation for some, you know, I guess you have to get into the liberal spirit, right? Doesn't matter if people use public transportation. The important thing is that the public transportation is there. I mean, if there was a big need, would a private company come in and take it on? I don't know about that. It might, it may not, but this is not the most dynamic part of the country in terms of businesses and innovation and taking advantage of opportunities. But it has been true up to this point that we didn't need the public transportation based on the amount of riders, correct? So Billy Garrett wrong, or do we have just a completely defective view of reality? I mean, you know, I know one thing about having spent a lot of time around liberals, far leftists in my life, is that there's never going to be a moment of, you know, epiphany, a light bulb over the head. He is not going to get up at any point and say, I was wrong. So take that for what it's worth. All right, let's go over some of our stories. Cannes Festival in France is fearing an attack. Political talk causing problems at work. Now, I've never seen a situation where more people, for example, when you go into a restaurant, a coffee shop, whatever, I've never seen a situation where more people are talking about a politician or politics. The politician is Trump. The number of people who are not just talking about it, but are very, I guess you would say proud to say that they're opposed to him, and they want people to overhear it, obviously. So it's become this huge deal to liberals or anti-Trump people, some of which are in the GOP, to get out the word that Trump is Hitler. Macron in France is pulling ahead in a snap poll following the TV debate with his opponent, Marie Le Pen. And I guess she really tore into him, and maybe that didn't look too good. Now, it's interesting that his wife is 25 years older than him. But apparently that's not harming him. That view of that he married his mother kind of an idea is not harming him. People asking, including the Wall Street Journal, what is the purpose of being a Republican if your legislation, even when you have the House and the Senate and the White House, appears to favor liberal ideas? So I think that is going to get under the skin of Trump, and he's going to lash back out and go for more conservative ideas. Joe Scarborough, Morning Joe, and Mika Brzezinski are engaged. So I guess they could do a marriage show there. They say that Venezuela is going to turn into another failed state like the USSR, and it's just a matter of time. And a Komodo dragon attacked a tourist and left him covered in blood. And you know how those Komodo dragons kill their prey? They bite them, and then their bite is so toxic from the amount of germs that they have in their mouth that the person dies of, or the, pardon me, it's obviously normally an animal, dies of septicemia, some infection. So, anyway, hopefully that person doesn't fall to that. 7:32, we have some local news, and then we're going to come back with some more. All right, so 7:36, and got for you, there's a mayor in Seattle, one of the largest and certainly one of the most dynamic cities in the United States, who's been accused of something. But think about Seattle. Where did Microsoft come from? Seattle. Where did Boeing come from? Seattle. Where did Starbucks come from? Seattle. Where did Amazon, the world's, which seems like it's going to become the world's largest company, Seattle? There's something in the water up there. All right, the mayor of Seattle has been accused by a fourth man of having been paid for sex or to have been sexually abused, and it is my understanding that these claims occurred supposedly when these young men were underage. Here's from Watch It News.
This week, a man jailed on drug charges accused Seattle Mayor Ed Murray of paying him for sex when the man was a teenager decades ago. The accuser is now the fourth person over the last month to accuse Murray of sexual abuse in the past. In a sworn declaration Tuesday night, the man said that he was introduced to Murray by Delvon Heckard, who also filed a lawsuit in April claiming he was sexually abused by the mayor in the 1980s. In a statement Wednesday, Jeff Redding, a spokesman for Murray, labeled the new claim an ambush copycat false accusation. Murray himself has also denied the claims by Heckard and two other men who have accused him of abuse while they were living in a center for troubled teens.
So my guess is that this guy, Murray, is not going to be long for office there. There's going to be a certain point when there's too many accusations. Okay, here is Ravi Zacharias on the National Day of Prayer, which Ben Rawson mentioned.
Hello, friends. This is Ravi Zacharias from RZIM in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm so thrilled you're all observing the National Day of Prayer, May the 4th. The theme is powerful, relevant, and timely. When you think of hear us, forgive us, and heal us. You know, I've been an itinerant speaker for over four decades. I have never seen the world in such chaos and such confusion. There's a spirit of rebellion. There's an anti-God state of mind. And yet we are sort of charting a course ahead of the high seas without a chart or a compass. We're just so self-directed and self-focused. God has called us to love him with all of our hearts and our souls and our minds. The best way to bring that about is for God's people to pray. As we humble ourselves and as we pray, he's promised to hear us and to forgive us and to heal our land. Hear us, forgive us, heal us. Please be a part of it. This is a most important day to set aside, to tell the world, but more importantly, to come before our sovereign God and let him hear the heartbeat of our prayer. How we long for him to intervene. Things have often been bad, and God's intervention has been equally dramatic. It can happen if we as God's people come before him in prayer. God bless you, and please set that day aside, and even as we lead up to it and following it, the National Day of Prayer that has been set aside for your particular region, May 4th. God bless you.
Okay, let's take another break and catch up on our breaks. We got a little behind with Ben. And 740 AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450. And here is your weather.
¶¶
Hey, it's Kelly.
Oh, Kelly, this is Dan. I'm out here listening in Radio Land. I caught the tail end of Ben Rawson, but I really think those guys are wasting a lot of money firing that Julia. I thought she was qualified. She was retired military.
Dan,
they headed out
Dan,
for her.
Dan, well, let's go on the air. Yeah. We're just coming on the air so you can share your concerns, okay?
Okay.
All right. And 743, we have a call from Dan, and Dan is just caught Ben Rawson's show, and Dan is concerned that the county manager, Julia Brown, was qualified and should not have been removed. Go ahead, Dan.
That said in a nutshell, apparently she wasn't evaluated. She's an outsider. That's probably why they got rid of her. They waste a lot of money. She stood up to that sheriff, Hill, and she's gone. She's a goner. And now we got this other guy, and we're wasting a lot of money. It's a poor county. That's my comment for the morning, Kelly.
Well, we do. It is a poor county. And do you think that she got caught in the crossfire of a kind of an internal political squabble?
Of course. The whole thing is politics, fighting for power and money. It's cutthroat. It's vicious, this politics. But I think she got a raw deal. Hopefully she lands on her feet. Expect a big lawsuit, more money. We can't afford it, Radio Land.
Okay, Dan, anything else?
I'm on my way to the dentist, so I'm not having the best day in the world.
All right, man, hang in there.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, so folks, any time you hear something on the show and you disagree with it, feel free to call in. And you know, what makes for good radio is conflict. It's just like, you know, a good movie, a good play, a good story has some element of conflict in it. So when you hear something you disagree with, whether it's something I say or maybe it was in a news clip or maybe some Ben Rawson said or anything else, feel free to call up and challenge the opinion. So your oppositional thoughts are always welcome. Now, free speech zone. We don't need to have trigger warnings or we don't have to shut down opposition here. All right. So now in how this played out with the County Manager Julie Brown, did it help her that there was no evaluations turned in? Now, the only way that it would help her, go along with me on this a little bit, the only way that it would have helped her for no evaluations is if she had a bad evaluation. It seems inevitable that this is true, that the evaluations were not good, because if she had, what the County Commission, and specifically Billy Garrett and Wayne Hancock wanted was for her to stay on, get her contract expanded, and pay her more money. That's what they wanted. We know that because that's what they did. That's what Billy Garrett did. Now, at the same time, her evaluations were not being shared with were not being put in her file, were not being shared with HR and the rest of the county commission. We're being told. So, did that help her, harm her? And, these had to be bad evaluations, because if they wanted her to stick around, then having good evaluations would have helped her, and to hold back a good evaluation would have harmed her. So it must have been in the minds of Billy Garrett and Wayne Hancock that these are bad evaluations, and therefore they had to be hidden so that they could keep her on. Now, in the long run, did that help her? I would argue that harmed her, but I don't know. I mean, maybe if her evaluations had come in a couple of years ago, she would have been fired on the spot. I don't know. I mean, and that maybe that's the whole story here, but all right. So, but it's got to be a lawsuit out of this, right? So do you think if the county gets in trouble in a lawsuit for not having put her evaluation on record, Do you think that Billy Garrett should be held responsible for this? And I mean legally responsible or to pay some of it. And the reason that I'm asking is that if Billy did, why is an evaluation done? An evaluation is done so that people can have an understanding of how a person is performing in their capacity. If it's been paid for and not done, not turned in, if it's executed and not turned in, isn't that the fault of the person that doesn't turn it in, and wasn't there a reason for it? And we do have another phone call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Thomas.
Thomas, good morning to you. Hope you're well, and what's on your mind?
Doing well. Can you or someone in our audience call in and let us know what the total, let's just say the last 3 years, the total amount of money that's been paid out by the county for lawsuits?
Wow.
I think we need to start tallying this stuff, because I'm telling you, something at the county is just completely and totally amiss.
Right. Right. So,
can someone call in and tell us how much has been paid out in the last 3 years for lawsuits where we've lost, whether it be at the jail or now we're talking about the possibility? I can't imagine that the manager would not. I'm sure she's had several calls already from some pretty good attorneys.
She's probably got a lawsuit ready to be filed, or maybe it's already been filed and we just don't know about it. I would think that just on the face of it, you're fired and you've never been given a job evaluation, on its face begs for a lawsuit, whether she did a good job or not. I mean, that's just my impression.
Well, I would totally agree with that, because I mean, there has to be some platform, some substance, to the reason for the firing, but we're talking in the millions of dollars.
Yes, and there was just a lawsuit. Well, it wasn't even a lawsuit, but there was a payout to Chris Barella. There was a payout over the guy that was in jail for 3 years. There have been payouts. There's something wrong with the feed-in from your phone for just a second. But there was, there's just been so many. And so out of all of those, how many were avoidable?
when you have a guy who gets a double-digit million-dollar settlement because they just forgot that he was in jail.
Yeah, slave.
I mean, come on.
And he went nuts while he was in there.
Jeez, Louise, I'm telling you. I'd like somebody listening today sometime, and let's just publish that. The amount of money that's been paid out by our county. And as the previous caller made clear, we don't have that kind of money.
Obviously.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thanks, Thomas. All right. So, look, somebody call in. Somebody do some homework. We can find out by tomorrow. But it is incredible. I mean, that's the only way to put it. All right. We'll take our last break here. 523-1450 and 805-6180. I'll look over your text. All right, so there's going to be a lawsuit with Julie Brown. There has to be, right? And the only thing that I could see that would save the board or whatever, I mean, not to predict how everything's going to turn out, but if it came out, this is just an if it came out that Julie Brown was part of an agreement to withhold her, if she knew about it, if she knew that there was an agreement to withhold her evaluation, and if she knew about it and she did nothing to, if she agreed with it, if she took part in it, and this is, by the way, speculative. I'm not saying this happened, but I'm just saying if it came out during a trial, during the collection of evidence, that she either knew about an agreement to withhold her evaluation and didn't do anything to protest or stop it, or if she took part in it, which, I mean, according to what I've heard is theoretically possible, then she is, that would be a defense, that she took part in her own, you know, some of the malfeasance, I guess you would call it. Wow, I've got a bunch of, I was trying to find another comedy clip for you, but let's go through some of this stuff. Peak age of loneliness for men, 35. And man killed female neighbor who taught parrot to insult him in Italy. Ignacio Frailes. Guess he was a little too frail emotionally. 46 from Capoterra, Sardinia. Stabbed his neighbor Maria Bonaria Cantu as she took a walk with her friends. And he stabbed her 11 times. He was very cold, very calm, and full of rage. And I was trying to see what she told the parrot to say to him. All right, so didn't say. Puerto Rico has declared bankruptcy, and they're saying it's the largest, I assume the largest in the history of the United States, the largest attempt to avoid creditors in history. So $73 billion in debt that they're trying to get out of, which is not good. And it's in the New York Times reports, they are claiming a type of bankruptcy. Yale, most people at Yale, although they don't express it, want there to be free speech. They don't want there to be codes. And one claim, Hillary or Donald's best friends are Barack and Hillary because of the stuff that's coming out in the media. Another article claims Democrats have lost confidence in America's future in the Atlantic, if you want to look at that. Pew research data indicates Democrats trust government less and feel less assured about the direction of the country than they did prior to the presidential election. And see anything else for you here? What we're trying to find out what the Republican plan for the health care reform is, whether it's going to include pre-existing conditions. Anything else here? Let's see. Going through Google News. Question, will Baltimore die? A scary thought. That it's become so just riddled with corruption and it's just very, very, just falling apart, really. All right. So thanks for tuning in. And there's a lot going still to be found out about what's happening down at the county and what they're planning on doing for a permanent county manager. What is Julia Brown going to do? Julia Brown, by the way, you're more than welcome to come on the show and talk about your opinion on stuff, and you feel free to say what happened. Don't hold your breath on that, but she is welcome. 759 Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. For tomorrow, I didn't get to your text, so I'll try to do that to today's text tomorrow. Have a great day. See you back in 22 hours. Thanks for joining me. Really enjoyed it. Ciao. Thank you.